it's time now for History Matters, taking a look back at this week in history, local, national, global, and beyond, with Scott Washington, our local historian extraordinaire, who joins us now here in the studio. How are you?
Well, doing just great, especially after the storm has passed. Things are starting to return to normal-ish.
Normal-ish. As normal as it gets around here.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so it seems appropriate that we look at this week in history and all the great, wonderful events that have occurred, and this will be one of them. Anyone who survived through this, say, I survived the hurricane, and they'll be able to talk like a grizzled veteran. But, you know, when you
were those who tell me I've been talking like a grizzled veteran for a long time.
Well, actually this week is September 19th is International Talk Like a Pirate Day, where you are showing that history doesn't always have to be totally serious. But
pirates ever actually said yar? When did that start? Who was the first? What was the first movie that? Because it's probably a movie, right, or a TV show that depicted a pirate as just running around with a eye patch and a parrot going yar.
The letter before S. Yar.
Yes.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the person who came up with this was apparently a couple of friends back in 1995 up in Albany, Oregon, because they were playing racquetball and one of them got hit with a ball and ar. They said, oh, hey, that should be a great idea for a day. International Talk Like a Pirate Day.
I'm guessing they weren't great at racquetball.
I'm guessing so. That's exactly right. But, you know, here's...
I was racquetball, honey. Well, we created International Talk Like a Pirate Day.
well, you lost,
is what you're saying.
When you said history, local, national, world, and beyond, here is one that fits for this week.
All right.
September 18th, 1973... future U.S. President Jimmy Carter files a report stating he sighted a UFO in 1969.
Who did he file a report? How do you file a report? Where do you go for that?
Information, yes. Is there a number I need to call for filing a report of it?
Let me connect you.
Yes. He said, according to Carter, it was the darndest thing I've ever seen. It was big. It was very bright. It changed colors, and it was about the size of the moon. We watched it for 10 minutes, but none of us could figure out what it was. If I become president, I'll make every piece of information this country has about UFO sightings available to the public and scientists.
And then he didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we have the rise of camera phones, and suddenly sightings of UFOs have dramatically dropped.
They have, yeah.
So maybe that's the arch nemesis.
I've told you about my UFO sighting, right? It was actually very similar to that story that Jimmy Carter tells.
Really?
Which is we were driving, this was in New Jersey, we were driving along, we pulled off the highway at our exit. When you pull off at this particular exit, you're like looking at a field, and then you make a right and you go back into civilization, which in Jersey is both not very far away and extremely far away, depending on your thoughts about Jersey. But we were looking at this field for a couple of seconds, and up and just hovering above was this weird flying thing that was not something we could identify.
Not
so
a
it was
helicopter,
an unidentified flying object.
Wow.
I guess if this were today, we would have seen it and assumed it was a drone of some kind, but this was pre-drone.
Right.
And we sat there in the car, like letting it idle and just looking at this weird thing that was just hovering, not doing anything. There was another car, so we've got corroborating evidence from these other people who we'll never be able to find. But I guarantee you there was another car also idling with people looking out the window at it. Never did figure out what it was. And then after a while, I wasn't doing anything. So after a while, we got bored and drove away.
Well, you know, I think that's such a great story. And, you know, even though we might guffaw at that kind of thing, in fact, actually, so much scientific curiosity is from that, from people observing something that says, this is odd, this is unusual.
Mm. And this is me not being a scientist. After a while, we got bored and drove away. And now I have this 45-second story to tell.
Oh, my gosh, it's wonderful. Worldwide, people are listening and tuning in. Here's something that happens today, September 20th. In 1711 is when explorer and surveyor John Lawson was killed by the Tuscarora Indians here in North Carolina. And as you recall, John Lawson, we're not sure when he was born. He comes from England, some assume around London. comes to Carolina, Charleston. And of course, there is no North Carolina, South Carolina at that point. It's a whole Carolina charter. And he gets a charter to actually explore inland. And in the early 1700s, that's what he does. He explores inland. Finally, the book goes to press in 1709, and it's a monster bestseller. It's translated into multiple languages. This is almost like UFO accounts, like, what is this? What the heck is this? Nobody's heard anything quite like this from the New World, and especially about the Carolina colonies. And at that point, you get German and Swiss immigrants start to come into this area, and it really stimulates interest in the Carolinas because somebody saw something and said, oh, this is new, haven't seen this before, and it's a detailed account, and it really reads actually quite well, even 307 years later.
All right.
Now, 2 days after, and when he was killed, he was with another gentleman, and it looks like some of the Native Americans may have thought the other gentleman was the governor of the colony, and apparently Lawson was protesting very vigorously, so they killed him. 2 days later, those Tuscarora Indians began a war against the settlers along the Neuse River and Trent and Pamlico Rivers, becoming known as the Tuscarora War. This goes on for another 2 years before the colonists rise up and they put an end to it, and they do win at very high cost to the Tuscarora Indians. But it just shows that things were not always hunky-dory Thanksgiving as we know at other times in places, or at least as mythology would have us
believe.
Yeah, right. And that must have been something, you know, when you're saying about UFOs, it must have been something to the Native Americans who were here to see these ships pull up. They must have been the same kind of equivalent of, like, UFOs. Like, what is this? So anyways, it's one of those things that we should at least note that what happened today, 307 years ago, does play an instrumental part in Carolina's history. But before that, John Lawson's contributions can't be underestimated. And in fact, his large kind of semicircular trip took him up into what is now Hillsborough. And he talks about the Okanichi or the Okanichi. There, and there has still been archaeological digs. In fact, if you go along the Riverwalk now, this one area that you couldn't get to, actually, but and you still really can't get to it, but it's right at the juncture of where the Eno River forms a small peninsula, and on the other side is the Okanichi Speedway, and which leads us into the next fun kind of item today, which is... on September 18th, two things. 1915 is when the first paved U.S. automobile track went into operation in Narragansett Speedway, Cranston, Rhode Island. Now, it would take a bunch of years later, and finally, a fellow named Bill France and four other racing entrepreneurs, they're scouting to start a racing kind of circuit called the NASCAR racing track, and they see this horse track in Orange County, actually in Hillsborough, and so they purchase it and they begin a speedway there called the Okanichi Speedway. Race takes place in 1948, and they thought, well, maybe they would. The original plan was 5,000 seats, but actually they have wooden grandstands that seats 10,000. They have sloped hillsides, and it can fit 25,000 more people. So it's pretty impressive. And this is still available to the public. It's been restored. Mm-hmm. And you can go see the last remaining dirt racetrack where some of the great racers of history, including Mr. Petty, actually went around that track. And to hear a tale, actually in September, usually sometime they will, the end of September, there is a racing group, that the Okanichi Racing Group, that will actually bring in some of these old-timers, and they'll go around
that
track.
That's a lot of fun, right?
Yeah, well, it'll be probably a little dangerous, too. But
as car racing should be.
Yeah, yeah, that's right, exactly. But that's kind of cool to think about, that real history happens here. Mm. And, in fact, Pixar Studios was doing one of their car series, And they looked at that site and were thinking about using some of it. And I don't know whether they use much of it, but they were talking about it. So
speaking with Scott Washington, History Matters. So while you've been talking, it is pouring now outside at University Place. And speaking of UFOs and sort of unexplained phenomenon, I swear to God, I have looked at three different weather sites in the last 2 minutes, and not a single one of them indicates that it's raining in Chapel Hill at all. AccuWeather says it's mostly sunny right now.
Yes.
It does have this little tiny spot of rain on the radar above, basically above us. It's this black cloud that's just like pouring down rain here at University Place. And every other website says absolutely no rain anywhere near us between here and like Virginia. And we look out the window and it's pouring rain.
It's pouring rain.
Wanted to interrupt our history segment to talk about that because it's a very weird thing that's going on right now.
and we
I apologize to
UFOs,
everyone who I said 15 minutes ago that it's partly cloudy and it's not going to rain. And now it's pouring rain here at University Place.
Close Encounter of the Third Kind. Wasn't that, you know, there were lots
Multiple websites are telling me that was a mound of potatoes in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. It was a
I thought there was at some point there was a lot of clouds up
in
the atmosphere or something like that. Yeah, that is really interesting.
Anyway,
coincidence.
Just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, well, this way it makes it more interesting.
Okay.
Like, this History Matters is more than just a show.
Forget about the present. Back to history. What else has happened this week?
Well,
it's been a busy week history-wise.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Well, of course, the September 17th is something important, Constitution Day and Citizenship Day. In fact, as I recall, a year ago, you were actually bringing a program to Hillsborough. In your alter ego as Professor Dr. Karen Jack.
Yes.
Very knowledgeable.
Yeah.
About
so Constitution subject. Day, September 17th, that's the day that the Constitution is signed, right? So
yes.
It
1787.
Yeah, the day that the framers walk out of Philadelphia and says, we've got it.
Yes, but they're still operating under the Articles of Confederation.
Yes.
And it still will not go, this new Constitution will not go into effect until a majority of the states signed on. They didn't
a
even
super
go
majority.
For
it. They needed nine. Yeah.
Well, but they could have gone for unanimous, but they said we'll never get that, so they went for 9 of 13.
Yeah.
And
but it didn't need to be unanimous because with if nine states, it didn't need to be unanimous for all practical purposes. It needed to be unanimous because if you had nine states ratify, then it goes into effect. But if one of those states that doesn't ratify is Virginia or North Carolina, then you can't get from one part of the country to the other, so you really needed a contiguous set of states in order for this to actually be a meaningful country.
Well, yes, except that in the rush to do this and their excitement of getting it done, no press allowed. George Washington bars the press, and so they come up with this new version, revised version of the Articles of Confederation, a loose voluntary alliance of states.
Yeah, they all
something
got,
new.
Yeah, this my favorite part about this is that it's a coup. It's a total coup d'état because all of these delegates get elected by their respective states and sent to Philadelphia with the mission of proposing amendments to the Articles of Confederation. They go to Philadelphia. They walk into Independence Hall. They close the door, lock it. They don't tell anyone what they're doing for the entire summer, and they come out with an entirely new government,
something different,
throwing the articles out the window, and the reaction was mixed.
It was. Well, and this 9 of 13, which was great, except that nobody really thought, well, what happens if people or the states say no?
Yeah.
They didn't really delve into that.
There was no plan B.
No.
Yeah.
So one of the first states that actually deals with this is Rhode Island, doesn't even take it to an elected delegation. Mm-hmm. They actually put it to a vote to the citizens without any debate.
Yeah.
Citizens of Rhode Island voted down.
Absolutely.
But Rhode Island
is
a pesky little state that had been a thorn in the side of the other states because after the Revolutionary War, you couldn't sign treaties because states could go in and out, and that's what was happening.
And Rhode Island kept doing that. They didn't send any delegates to the convention in the first place, so they were out of this whole process from the get-go. And then was it Maryland had several delegates who were at the convention who had gotten frustrated with the process and left in a huff.
Yeah.
One of them was a guy named Luther Martin who becomes one of the leading opponents of the Constitution. So now you've got the perfect person to go on cable TV is someone who was a delegate in the convention and can spill all of the gory details about how horrible this is and how selfish and elitist all of these people were. So he was out doing that. And there were a couple people in New York who were kind of in the same position. Melanchthon Smith, I think. I know a little bit about the Constitution. It's a fascinating debate.
That's why I was so excited to get to this.
It is a fascinating period of American history. We've completely forgotten about because we think, oh, Constitution, it's great. But when it came out,
oh my gosh,
it was reviled, and there was support, there was opposition, there were people.
They were skeptics, and they were immediately branded as anti-federalists.
Right.
But they're skeptics.
Yeah.
Many of these people, they all fought together in the Revolutionary War. They were just saying, wait a minute, not so fast. There are elements of this. In fact, North Carolina, it was pretty clear right from the get-go that, the majority feeling of the state was very skeptical of it. And so they put it off to July, almost a year later in 1788, before they ratified or at least discuss it. And by that point, 9 states had ratified it, 10th finally did. And then you had that was New York, while they're meeting, and you have these 2 states, Rhode Island and North Carolina, being the holdouts.
Yep.
But North Carolina changes history, as we've talked many times.
Right. Requiring a Bill of Rights. Yeah. I still do appreciate the fact that Hillsborough now tells the story as North Carolina met in Hillsborough and voted to hold off on endorsing the Constitution without a Bill of Rights. What they did was they said no way to the Constitution. In 1788, there were a lot of anti-federalists.
Well, what the vote was very careful. It was one of those votes that it was a delightful dance right at the last minute where what they voted on the motion was first it came up prior to ratifying the Constitution, these things should be done.
Mm-hmm.
And so before it gets debated, then Iredell jumps to his feet, James Iredell, leader of the Federalists, and says, okay, we can't do that. And maybe we can't deal with all this stuff. We're going to leave you on the edge of your seat until the next time. But they leave it in suspense. The motion gets carried, and there's confusion. Is North Carolina in and out? And one of the people that signed the Constitution, Hugh Williamson, becomes this ambassador to the fledgling new United States under this new Constitution when they meet in the spring of 1789 to reassure delegates that North Carolina is committed to the vision of the United States, but they have reservations about certain things, including a Bill of Rights.
And that is how history matters. We're going to wrap it up there. Scott Washington, thank you so much.
And it's just about stopped raining.
It stopped raining,
We talked about UFOs,
still raining.
Coincidence? I don't know.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, dude.